Joining me now from My Golf Daily, Ron Mintz. Ron, welcome into the golf shop.
Thank you, Mark. Good to be with you.
All right, so Brooks Koepka, by the way, good bump there, Jake. Garth Brooks for Brooks Koepka winning the U.S. Open.
Oh, that is good.
So what was your impression, first of all, of Brooks Koepka winning and getting to 16 under par? I mean, is he really that good, and can he continue this run during the summer?
You know, the answer is yes to both of those. I have been watching Brooks, as most people have, for a while, and knew it was just a matter of time. I didn't know about the major, but I knew he would have more wins. He's a total package. He's almost a little bit shorter version of Dustin Johnson, and they're real good buddies. They work out together. And as you saw coming down the final few holes there, he's got ice water in his veins. Nothing bothered him. So it didn't surprise me. I didn't know how it was going to finish. You know, it was sort of like a NASCAR race when they got one lap to go. And they're all bunched up together on the final lap, and that's what we had yesterday. He came in on top. So,
what was your impression of Aaron Hills? I mean, I've been a little critical. I actually, from a U.S. Open standpoint, I wasn't a fan. I actually think it would be a great PGA Championship course, just because the PGA you tend to get more. A lot more of guys making a bunch of birdies, but at the same time, if you hit a bad shot in the PGA Championship, you get penalized, and we saw that where, you know, if you get out of position or hit it into that tall, wispy stuff, you could make bogey, double, or triple. What about your impression as a U.S. Open golf course?
Well, I was very skeptical, too. I think I was still a little bit gun-shy from Chambers Bay and how that worked out. There was no doubt the course was beautiful, but when you looked at the yardage and the, especially on the par fives, you're thinking, my gosh, you know. But yet these guys still were able to drive the par fives. One of them played 676 yards, I think, yesterday. And a lot of guys drove it in two. So I had read one player, I forget which one, that played in U.S. Amateur back in 2011. It was Kelly Kraft is who it was. He said, I remember playing there, but I don't remember much about it. He said, I know the yardage was very long, but it's not that hard. And I think it's because a lot of slopes were the drives. If you hit it just right off the bank, it'll go another 75 yards. And so the yardage is a little deceiving. But overall, I like the course. I thought the fescue did get out of hand. I don't think it should have been that high. But that's USGA. So.
Yeah, I mean, I really felt like you could narrow that golf course down. I mean, we heard it all week. Some of the widest fairways in U.S. Open history. You know, what if they reduce the size? What if they cut the fairway size in half, give you a little bit more of a first cut, a lot more of a primary cut, and then have the tall, wispy stuff? I mean, at that point, do we change the dynamic of this event and it becomes more U.S. Open-like? The scores get down lower. I mean, I'm of the opinion if you're sitting there going, okay, we're waiting for the wind because we didn't have wind for 3 days. And if the wind was the factor in what's going to make the golf course harder, I'm against waiting for a condition to make it a U.S. Open course and make it U.S. Open scores. And by the way, the guys still kind of lit it up a little bit yesterday with the wind.
They did, and it was funny. You know, I'm active on social media, and Saturday it was just I couldn't believe how many people were upset about the scores going low. I didn't realize people cared that 1 year out of five, we had low scores at the U.S. Open, but it's always been near par, and people want it to stay that way, evidently. We did a poll, informal poll, and got pretty good results about would you rather keep the scores low, which 43% said yes. Would you rather have low scores, and only 8% said yes. And 49% said they didn't care as long as it was a fair test of golf. But I have heard that suggestion you just made about the rough, and I think that would be the solution.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I go back to, you know, the other time that 16 under par was Rory at Congressional. Now, Congressional was, I mean, it was a bowl of soup. I mean, pea soup was probably less wet than Congressional was for that entire week of that golf tournament. And you know, and the low score was 65. They got to 16 under. I mean, if I remember correctly, they played Live Clean and Place one, maybe 2 days for that golf tournament. Erin Hills was not that wet. I mean, yeah, they got some rain, but it wasn't. You weren't getting mud balls in the fairway where there was no consideration of playing the ball up, and the scores just went crazy. And I think that's what maybe bothered people more than anything is that, you know, and the talk about the 9 under par that's being shot by Justin Thomas is it's nowhere near in my mind comparable to what Johnny Miller did.
No, and Johnny agrees with you.
Right, of course, yeah, and he got called bitter for that.
I called him a little bitter. I said I was shocked that I thought he was kidding with some of the remarks he made. Then it became obvious he really was defending his score like it. You couldn't compare it to Justin, and you know it's sort of like. And I'm not a big NASCAR fan, but it's a good analogy. You can't really compare Daytona 500 to the Martinsville 400. They're just two different races. And so it's hard to compare scores on different golf courses. But to me, a 63 is a 63, whether it's a par 72 or par 7. I still think it's a great score.
Yeah, and I get it. I mean, the way I look at it, too, is, and okay, if you're going to bring it back there. So congressional, Rory got the 16 under. The two previous U.S. Opens there were -4 Ernie Els and I think -2 Ken Venturi. And obviously Venturi's in incredible heat. I think Ernie's was pretty warm as well and you know, fairly dry. So you look at a golf course like that, yeah, the 16 under was a complete anomaly compared to the other ones. My point is, you know, if we start saying we need to go to some of these other golf courses because some of these traditional U.S. Open courses are outdated. Well, Ron, do you honestly think that at Wingfoot, Pebble Beach, and... Well, what's the other one? At Shinnecock next year, do you think somebody's even going to threaten 63? I don't.
No, I don't think the USGA will let it happen. And I don't know what they could have done to stop it, like you said earlier, at the Erin Hills, but they normally figure out a way to tuck the pins and not water and keep the scores low, but they weren't able to do that. What amazed me yesterday, I don't know if you noticed this, but I sort of got bored. The first 3 days, nobody was making any putts. I mean, long putts, and so a lot of short ones missed. Sunday, it seemed like everybody was making everything.
Yeah.
And I don't know what changed. I mean, what changed on the greens? They weren't that wet, like you said, and maybe they just got lucky. But there were no bogey-free rounds yesterday. Normally, there's two or three guys will go bogey-free. Nobody went bogey-free, but yet they were making putts like crazy.
Yeah, and I think the other thing that irritates me too is like you were talking about it seemed like there were a lot of holes where you could catch a slope and the ball would roll out 50, 60, 70 yards or whatever. I'm okay with that happening once or twice on a golf course. It seems like it happens 8 or 9 times in Erin Hills. The other issue I had was the fact that from a risk reward standpoint, yeah, I know they moved a par 4 up and they made it drivable and Justin Thomas hit a 3-wood and almost dang near made a 1 on the hole. But for me, as a fan, I sit there and was going, I even asked my dad the question. I said, you know, if you're a fan and you had tickets to Sunday, what hole were you going to watch? There was no hole to me that seemed like it was going to be pivotal, and it ended up being that Brooks Koepka just made three birdies and nobody else could match him, and that was what kind of changed the whole dynamic of the golf tournament. But there was no hole that I would have gone there on a Sunday and said, I'm going here and I'm going to watch the action here.
Well, number 9 got a lot of publicity. Everybody said that would be a really surprising hole, even though it was a short par 3. But you're right. I wouldn't have sat there. I don't know where I would have gone, to be honest with you.
Yeah, and I think that's what takes away from it being a high-quality U.S. Open course for me is I just didn't feel like that there was a stretch or, I mean, even on Thursday and Friday watching TV, you know, a lot of times with the U.S. Open, even if it's a course that you're not familiar with, I mean – I don't know if I remember off the top of my head, you know, too many holes at Shinnecock, but I guarantee you after I watch it on Thursday and Friday, there's going to be, you know, at some point on Thursday afternoon when they show a guy on a hole before they tell me what hole he's on, I'm going to be like, oh, he's on 12 or he's on 14 or he's on 6 or he's on 8. At Erin Hills, they kind of all blurred together.
Yeah, I don't want to start this picking on Fox Sports, but
go ahead.
They kept bouncing around. I never really figured out what hole they were on and what analyst was talking about. It, That's a whole nother subject, but yeah, I couldn't tell by looking either. There's one stat I want to throw out there, and I'm going to ask you how this could happen. The par 4 15th hole was the hardest hole in the final round, played at 4.5. The day before on Saturday in round 3, it was the easiest hole on the tournament, playing at 3.5. How can a hole go from the hardest to the or back and forth? I mean, that just blew my mind.
Yeah, I guess, you know, it was downwind on Saturday, and it was way up, and it was against the wind on Sunday, and it was, you know, further back. And I guess, you know, maybe where that pin was, because if you went after that pin and you missed it at all to the right, it was going off and down the hill. Again, we're talking with my Golf Daily's Ron Mintz. And so who was – this is an interesting question that we had earlier. With all the big names that missed the cut, who was most disappointing to you? And I'm going to tell you who mine was before you get into it. Mine was Bubba Watson. Bubba, you know, we always say that Bubba, you know, he needs a lot of room sometimes on some of these tight golf courses that they play at U.S. Opens. It's terrible for him because he can't start the ball where he wants to. He had all of Wisconsin to start the ball off the tee at Erin Hills. So who was most disappointing to you?
Well, he wasn't the most disappointing, but I agree with you, and I thought about that. The way he shapes shots and he can – hit it anywhere, that would have been a great course for him. But, you know, Bubba's on a downward spiral. I didn't look today, but he was 36th last week, I believe, in the world golf rank.
40th.
40th, okay. And he was top 10 this time last year. So I don't know what's going on with him. I know he tried to lose weight. He did lose about 20 pounds. I think he's doing a lot of self-promotion to all these businesses he's got. I don't know if he's concentrated on his games enough, but I guess DJ was my biggest disappointment. I really thought he was going to win this thing going in, Dustin Johnson. And he actually, the first time I've seen him in a long time, he acted really frustrated after missing the cut. Normally he doesn't seem too upset, but he was very disappointed.
Yeah, I really felt like he was one of those guys that after the Thursday round, kind of things didn't go his way, that I thought he was going to easily make the cut. I mean, I thought he was going to get it to one or two under and then be able to make a decent move on Saturday and get himself back in contention. And he just never got anything going. And it was odd to see somebody that you feel like – and it's weird. Since the slip and fall at Augusta, he's kind of not been able to find it again, has he?
No. I think there was – And I've heard this off the record. I think the injury was more serious than we were led to believe. And I don't know if he's still, you know, getting over it, or maybe it broke his momentum. He says he feels great. The game's great, except, you know, the putter, he needs to work on a little bit. But, you know, I was pulling for him every week because he was just on a roll.
Yeah.
And I really thought he could win. I didn't see anybody I thought could beat him. I knew Roy hadn't been playing much. He just got married. He'd been testing clubs. He signed a $200 million contract. I didn't think he'd miss the cut, but I didn't think Roy would win. Jason, same thing with his back problem last year. He hadn't played much. And then after his presser Sunday, or at his presser Friday, he said he didn't feel good. And he's gotten the, I guess, the reputation of he's sort of not a hypochondriac, but Jason never feels good. So I didn't expect him to win. DJ, I did. And that's what disappointed him most.
Well, Ron,
he didn't close out at Wells Fargo, which I thought he should have beat Brian Harmon there.
Yep.
But good for Brian. I mean, I thought he was good. That's who I thought was going to win after Friday. I was surprised he fell down. I was shocked that Justin Thomas fell as far as he did Sunday. I mean, how can you go from one extreme to the other? It's just like the course. It changed the course. I talked to Hank Haney. I said, how can a 9/10 of an inch of rain cause that much difference in a golf course? It just didn't make sense.
All right. Well, Ron, man, I really appreciate you coming on with us tonight. We're going to catch up with you again real soon, maybe right before the Open Championship. And once again, thanks a lot.
My pleasure. And let's do that. I love talking about the majors especially.